Good evening. I am thankful for the opportunity to be able to talk with you for a few minutes tonight. I wanted to share a few ideas that I've been working through lately in some lessons that I've been doing at Expressway on what's termed the Minor Prophets. And so if you want to look toward the end of the Old Testament, we're going to look at the book of Habakkuk tonight. When I was growing up, actually Louie made a joke about this as well earlier, but when I was growing up, I was learning the books of the Old Testament, and I thought tobacco was in the Bible because of, well, by the time you're talking about the last books of the Bible, you kind of run all those words together, and it sounds sort of like tobacco. But it's Habakkuk, and so we'll talk about some ideas from this book tonight. The book of Habakkuk. One thing I do want to mention to you, though, before we get started, just by way of introduction. Over at Expressway, we're having a gospel meeting next week. And Dee Bowman is an incredibly encouraging speaker. If you haven't had a chance to hear him, take this chance to hear him. He's come a number of times to the Expressway congregation, and he will be there from Sunday through Wednesday of next week, so particularly on Monday and Tuesday of next week, if you have an opportunity to come by and visit with us. We'd be encouraged by your presence, and I'm sure you'll be encouraged by what Dee has to share. So hope to see you at that time as well. Well, if you've been paying attention to the news lately, we've been having a little bit of economic trouble in the last few years. And there's blame back and forth about who's at fault and all that kind of stuff. But no reason to get into all of that. But just simply to say, whether it's economic trouble or trouble between nations or good times or bad times, it's not all that different now than it was back in the time of the judges or the kings or the divided kingdom, or, you know, the time of the prophets, of the what's termed the minor prophets. History repeats itself to various in various ways, and so whenever we look at what God reveals to us in some of these prophets, there are lessons for us to think about today, or principles that we can take from it to know that, to know how to maybe look at where we might go from here. There's an election coming up, and so which direction the country goes, and if we even know what direction the country will really go, depending on who comes, we really don't know what the future holds. And so how do we look into a future that seems at least partly cloudy? And how do we face whether the future may turn toward a positive direction or the future would turn toward a negative direction? Maybe a little bit of Habakkuk will tell us how to look at things, especially at a dire time in which the people that he was surrounded by were facing very bad consequences coming up. Now, this is as artistic as I ever get, which is not saying much at all, but this is kind of a summary of where some of these books of the minor prophets. They're called the minor prophets because, in general, they're a bit shorter in length than some of the previous ones. Where they show up, and I'm not going to go through all of those. That's what the whole 12 weeks of the class is about. So, we're just going to do one of the lessons out of it. But just as a reminder of some of the history, you had King Saul and King David and King Solomon, and they were over the United Kingdom. But then Solomon ended up becoming unfaithful, such that there was the promise from God that most of the kingdom would be lost, but some of it would be preserved under his son's rule. And so the division came, and you had the northern kingdom, the kingdom of Israel, which had a series of kings, none of which ever were faithful to God. And the people reflected that leadership as well. The people generally were not faithful to God and became worse and worse and worse over time. And the kingdom of Judah, under Rehoboam and then subsequent descendants of David, continued on. Most of those kings were bad. Every once in a while, there would be a good king who would try to restore the people to doing what was right and what was proper. And as a result of that, when Assyria grew and developed to be an overpowering nation, they ended up coming through and wiping out the kingdom of Israel because God was finished with Israel. God was finished trying to reach out and get them to return to him. And so he sent them into captivity with Assyria and punished Judah at the same time, but did not totally annihilate Judah. Jerusalem stood by God's protection at that time, primarily because there was a good king, Hezekiah, who appealed to God, and Isaiah was during that time, and Micah was during that time, prophesying to them. And so God spared Hezekiah and Jerusalem from being swallowed up by the Assyrian captivity. Well, Judah didn't learn its lesson. After Hezekiah, bad kings arose again, for the most part. There was another good one in there at some point. But they didn't learn from the failings of themselves, and particularly the failings of Israel. And so we get down to the time where Zephaniah is prophesying the doom to come, and Habakkuk is struggling, wanting to be faithful, trying to be faithful, and he is so discouraged because of the way the people in Jerusalem and the area of Judah are just totally abandoning being anything remotely close to righteous or faithful to God. So Habakkuk approaches God. This is an unusual way in which a lot of the book is written. Habakkuk questions God, and God gives answers. And so let's see what God is saying at this time when Assyria is still in charge. And yet it looks like things are really bad in Judah. The burden which the prophet Habakkuk saw. Number one, it's interesting that it's described as the burden. A number of times, whenever you're standing for the truth and trying to tell people who really don't want to hear, it is a burden, but it's something that must be borne and done anyway. But the prophet's question is in verses 2 through 4. O Lord, how long shall I cry and you will not hear? Even cry out to you violence and you will not save. Why do you show me iniquity and cause me to see trouble? For plundering and violence are before me. There is strife and contention arises. Therefore the law is powerless and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous, therefore perverse judgment proceeds. What he says is, society is breaking down, has broken down, and violence and evil seems to be overwhelming the few who are trying to do what's right. And so what ends up happening is, the judicial system ends up being taken such that it's no longer trying to deliver justice, but it's into bribes or whatever will end up being under the influence of what is evil rather than trying to stand up and do what's right and maintain what is good. And so he says, how long can I cry out to you in all of this mess that is Judah and Jerusalem. And it seems like you're just letting it go by and letting perversions of justice occur over and over again, letting the evil win. And sometimes, to make application a little bit, sometimes don't we feel like society in general is on a downhill road? That society is having more and more acceptance of what is evil and calling that good, and calling those who would stand for righteousness bigoted and narrow-minded, and you know, we feel more and more put down by a society that wants to embrace things that are not right and not good and not going to help society function well. And we are concerned about whether or not it's a good old boy network, or whether or not true justice is still possible. Are we going to be protected by the legal system, or is it breaking down? Different things like that. Well, there's definitely a lot of that kind of strife and struggle that they're feeling right here. Well, what's God's reply? Look among the nations and watch. Be utterly astounded, for I will work a work in your days which you would not believe, though it were told you. For indeed I am raising up the Chaldeans, a bitter and hasty nation which marches through the breadth of the earth to possess dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity proceed from themselves. Their horses also are swifter than leopards and more fierce than evening wolves. Their chargers charge ahead. Their cavalry comes from afar. They will fly as the eagle that hastens to eat. They all come for violence. Their faces are set like the east wind. They gather captives like sand. They scoff at kings, and princes are scorned by them. They deride every stronghold, for they heap up earthen mounds and seize it. Then his mind changes and he transgresses. He commits offense, ascribing this power to his God. What Habakkuk is told by God is, I'm going to punish Judah, and my solution to the problem to punish Judah for its sins is to raise up Babylon, the Chaldeans. And look at Babylon. Babylon is so fierce, and that's not a nice description of them. Babylon is so overwhelming and fierce and cruel. I'm going to use them to wipe out Judah and take them into captivity. That's an unsettling answer. Because what, you know, Habakkuk is looking at Assyria. Assyria is in charge, but Babylon is building and developing or whatnot. And as soon as Babylon comes along in the next couple of years and overtakes, then they sweep through and take everything, including Judah. And so when Habakkuk is appealing to God and saying, society is looking worse and worse and worse, and we're oppressed, what is your answer? The equivalent is, my answer is, I'm raising up Iran. Or I'm raising up China. Or I'm raising up Russia. Or whatever. And that's going to be my solution is, America will be corrected and taken over and swallowed up by some foreign entity that looks a lot worse. And what is Habakkuk's reaction to that? Are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. I think that's more of an appeal than it is, you know, he's kind of checking with God. Are we going to see things through here? He makes a contrast with the rest of the sentence. We shall not die. O Lord, you have appointed them for judgment. O rock, you have marked them for correction. As in, those who are evil in Judah, not the righteous ones, right? Well, keep going. Verse 13. You are of purer eyes than to behold evil, and cannot look on wickedness. Why do you look on those who deal treacherously, Babylon? Why do you look on those who deal treacherously and hold your tongue when the wicked devours a person more righteous than he? Habakkuk says, that's not the answer I was looking for. Judah's bad, but Babylon's worse. So why in the world would you use a nation that is worse than this nation in order to do the punishment? Because you're so good and you're so righteous. How in the world can I equate that and can I figure that out? And then he continues to ask, basically he says, they're going to wipe out everybody. They're going to just sweep everybody up like a fish in a net. And it's going to be turmoil and destruction. Shall they therefore empty their net and continue to slay nations without pity? I will stand my watch and set myself on the rampart and watch to see what he will say to me and what I will answer when I am corrected. He says, I know I've asked a question of God and he's going to correct me. And so I'm going to just sit back and see what God says. Here's God's answer. Verse 2 of chapter 2 and following. Then the Lord answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain on tablets, that he may run who reads it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it will speak, and it will not lie. Though it tarries, wait for it, because it will surely come, it will not tarry. Behold the proud, his soul is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith. Indeed, because he transgresses by wine, he is a proud man, and he does not stay at home, because he enlarges. And it goes on. It goes on in the rest of this. I'm not going to read all of it. We don't have the time for it. I encourage you to read the whole book later, to read through the different question, answer, and get the full effect. But he goes in verse 5 and following and says, in the long run, Babylon will be punished too. Okay? And the proud, his soul is not upright, but in contrast, the just shall live by his faith. He says, in the midst of all this turmoil, the just shall live by his faith regardless of what comes forward. And ultimately, the proud will be humbled, the proud will be brought down. That's verse 5 and following. But though it tarries, wait for it, because it will surely come. It's going to take its time. It's not going to be immediate. It's going to be at its own time, at whatever time God chooses. Okay? But the key is, the just shall live by his faith. Through whatever the turmoil is, through whatever the upheaval is, the answer is, everything will turn out okay, Habakkuk. The just shall live by his faith, and everything will be all right. Now, there is, toward the end of chapter 2, I'll just mention this in passing, and then we'll get into a bit of chapter 3, and then have one other passage I want to go to outside of the book of Habakkuk to wrap things up. You notice before that God said he was going to bring Babylon up, and yet Babylon, in his mind, was going to end up thinking that his God, not Jehovah, was the reason for it. Well, there's futility in that, and that's brought back up in chapter 2, verses 18 and following. That's one of the reasons why Babylon was going to fall by the wayside, was a denial of the true God and ascribing it to others. What profit is the image that its maker should carve it? The molded image, a teacher of lies, that the maker of its mold should trust in it to make mute idols. Woe to him who says to wood, awake, to silent stone, arise, it shall teach. Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver, yet there is no breath in it at all. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. And so he says, you know, these nations may end up rising, and they may end up thinking they're getting their power from this, that, or the other, and ascribing it falsely. What people will ultimately come to understand and recognize is the true God is over everything. And with the turmoil, all will and should have the opportunity to come to understand who's truly in charge. Well, chapter 3. Habakkuk responds and gives praise to God, recognizes that God is all-powerful to be able to bring about whatever he wants to bring about. Even if that means a more evil nation will wipe out a nation that is bad, really bad. Even if a more evil nation is used as the instrument that God has the power and ability to bring about whatever he's going to bring about. But look at verse 16 and following. I think this is interesting. When I heard, my body trembled. My lips quivered at the voice. Rottenness entered my bones, and I trembled in myself, that I might rest in the day of trouble. When he comes upon the people, he will invade them with his troops. And in other words, he said, I heard Judah's done for, and I'm going to have to live through it, hopefully survive it, and there's nothing in my future that looks like it's going to be anything enjoyable whatsoever, right? I'm not looking forward to this, but I know it's coming. And yet he ends up taking solace in the promise of the just shall live by faith. Verse 17, though the fig tree may not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, though the labor of the olive may fail, and the fields yield no food, though the flock may be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls, even though, what that is, even though unemployment may be 8 or 10 or 15%, even though economic prosperity may be getting worse even than what it is now, even though there are difficulties in whatever our society is or whatnot, and it looks worse rather than better at any point, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength. He will make my feet like deer's feet, and he will make me walk on my high hills. And so he says, no matter, even if the future is bleak, my relationship with God is such that I can rely on that through whatever the turmoil is. The just shall live by his faith, and that's what I'm going to have to hang on to. Now, I am not prophesying that we're headed in a deeper, harder situation than what we've been through the last few years. I'm also not prophesying that we're headed into a better condition. I have no idea. The fact is, regardless of which direction, or if we just keep muddling along in some of the difficulties that we have, the answer to that, individually, for each one of us, regardless of where society goes, the answer for that individually is, let's live by faith. And if we live by faith, then whether it's high or it's low. And if you know some of the history of Israel and Judah, there were times of economic prosperity, and there were times of deep, dark depression, excessive misery. Anybody get the reference? Hee-haw. Okay. And back and forth. Why? Because God was trying to say, okay, here are some hard times. Are you going to start to pay attention? And they didn't. And then he would turn it around and try to bless them a little bit and say, okay, in good times, are you going to come back and be thankful? And for the most part, they weren't. And then it went back to bad times. It went back and forth until it was finally over. And he said, that's enough. What does the future hold? I don't know. Is it possible that we have economic prosperity for a while longer? Sure. If so, be faithful to God. Don't let that luxury make you complacent. Is it possible that it will get worse? Yes. If so, be faithful to God through whatever it is. Is it possible that God would raise a nation that we perceive to be worse than the bad that we see in the American society right now, to bring more of a punishment to this country? It's possible, because no country is guaranteed anything. Countries rise and fall. And if that were to happen, Lord willing it won't, but if that were to happen, is our faith primarily in the existence of the United States of America as we've always known it, or is our faith in God regardless of the circumstances? What happened to him, and what happened to Jeremiah, and what happened to most of those folks was either, a lot of those who were evil were killed, but the rest of them were carted off to captivity. It would be the equivalent of being carted off to China to live. In fact, Jeremiah ends up telling them, you've just been carted off to captivity. Get used to living there. In Jeremiah 29, there's a letter that he writes to the folks in captivity and says, you're going to be there for 70 years. Imagine that. That's Autumn and Celia coming back when she's 75 and she's 73. And being in China until that time. And they say, get used to living there, and because you're going to be there for a couple generations. Build houses, get along with the people, don't be trying to be rebellious the whole time you're in China. Survive and thrive, and then you'll have some opportunity. We would never know whether we'd have any opportunity or not, because we don't have the direct revelation today. But that's what was going on here and what they were told, because it was the end. Are we prepared to live in faith if it meant relocating to a different country because things collapsed? Go back for just a moment. It's interesting. Habakkuk 2, verse 6 and 7. It's talking about the collapse that will end up happening to Babylon. Babylon hasn't even risen as a power fully yet. And he's already promising Babylon's going to overextend themselves and collapse. Here's one of the ways that it's described. Will not all these take up a proverb against him and a taunting riddle against him and say, woe to him who increases what is not his, how long? And then notice this particular thing. And to him who loads himself with many pledges, will not your creditors rise up suddenly? Will they not awaken to who oppress you, and you will become their booty? What's that say? That says a nation can borrow so much money that they get themselves where they're crippled when their creditors call it due. What's happening to Greece and Spain, and what's being warned about what's happening to the United States in the debt that's being brought on? Now, the Lord could bring about a protection such that we don't have a total collapse, but that could continue and continue and continue until there is a total collapse because it's an unsustainable circumstance. And it's what happened to Babylon. It can happen to any nation. It's right there. So I have no idea what the future holds, but God's answer is ultimately He will end up bringing down the more evil nation, but He may use an evil nation to bring down one that should be doing a lot better than it is. Let's go over to Psalm 37. Regardless of the future, whether it's better or worse, there are going to be times in which, you know, difficulties arise and it seems like the evil is winning and all that kind of stuff. Psalm 37 should... I don't remember the Great Depression myself. And I don't remember World War II. But that was another period within our own history of great upheaval. And yet, after all of that great upheaval, that was abjectly evil was defeated. And there ended up being a time of restoration and rebuilding and stuff. But it was a horrible time to get through the Depression and get through the war. And with terrorism that we have now and all that kind of, you know, these are turbulent times. Well, Psalm 37 hopefully will help us to keep it in perspective. Do not fret because of evildoers, nor be envious of the workers of iniquity, for they shall soon be cut down like the grass and wither as the green herb. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and feed on His faithfulness. Delight yourself also in the Lord, and He shall give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord, trust also in Him, and He shall bring it to pass. He shall bring forth your righteousness as the light, and your justice as the noonday. Rest in the Lord, and wait patiently for Him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass. Cease from anger, and forsake wrath. Do not fret, it only causes harm. For evildoers shall be cut off, but those who wait on the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. Jehovah's Witnesses end up using the idea of inherit the earth and all, as if that's this promise of some sort of a heaven concept or something like that. Actually, what that means is, ultimately, no matter how hard the struggle is, empires like Babylon will crumble. And a more humble people will survive. Empires like Germany in World War II, no matter how hard the struggle is, ultimately, God's not going to allow the world to ultimately be so overwhelmed that only that evil would exist. It will at some point crumble and dissolve, and a meek and more mild people will survive through that. That's what this is talking about. Whenever it's going through history and saying that those who wait on the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. Abject evil will not ultimately triumph. For yet a little while, and the wicked shall be no more. Indeed, you will look carefully for his place, but it shall be no more. But the meek shall inherit the earth, and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. The wicked plots against the just, and gnashes at him with his teeth. The Lord laughs at him, for he sees that his day is coming. The wicked have drawn the sword and have bent their bow to cast down the poor and needy, to slay those who are of upright conduct. Their sword shall enter their own heart, and their bows shall be broken. A little that a righteous man has is better than the riches of many wicked, for the arms of the wicked shall be broken. But the Lord upholds the righteous. The Lord knows the days of the upright, and their inheritance shall be forever. They shall not be ashamed in the evil time. And in the days of famine they shall be satisfied. But the wicked shall perish, and the enemies of the Lord, like the splendor of the meadows, shall vanish. Into smoke they shall vanish away. The wicked borrows and does not repay, but the righteous shows mercy and gives. For those blessed by him shall inherit the earth, but those cursed by him shall be cut off. The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholds him with his hand. I have been young and now I am old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his descendants begging bread. He is ever merciful and lends, and his descendants are blessed. Depart from evil and do good, and dwell forevermore. For the Lord loves justice and does not forsake his saints. They are preserved forever. But the descendants of the wicked shall be cut off. The righteous shall inherit the land and dwell in it forever. The mouth of the righteous speaks wisdom, and his tongue talks of justice. The law of his God is in his heart. None of his steps shall slide. The wicked watches the righteous and seeks to slay him. The Lord will not leave him in his hand, nor condemn him when he is judged. Wait on the Lord and keep his way, and he shall exalt you to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, you shall see it. I have seen the wicked in great power, in spreading himself like a native green tree. Yet he passed away, and behold, he was no more. Indeed, I sought him, but he could not be found. Mark the blameless man, and observe the upright, for the future of that man is peace. But the transgressors shall be destroyed together. The future of the wicked shall be cut off. But the salvation of the righteous is from the Lord. He is their strength in the time of trouble. And the Lord shall help them and deliver them. He shall deliver them from the wicked and save them because they trust in him. Now what happened? Does that mean every single person who's a Christian is going to be... Well, there were a lot of martyrs. Stephen was martyred. There are... Christians, and Isaiah is reputed to have been killed. But Jeremiah was preserved. I believe probably Habakkuk was preserved. Daniel was preserved. And in captivity ended up rising to great power. Because why? Because he sought to live in a quiet and peaceable life. There's that concept through the New Testament, the quiet and peaceable life. We need to pray for our rulers so that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life. 1 Timothy 2:2, I think. If not, it's somewhere else. And that's the whole concept. Whatever the turmoil, whatever the difficulty, pray for us to be able to have a leadership. Romans 13 talks about us to have a leadership where the government would be a terror to evil and would praise good. May we live in that society and continue to live in that. Pray for our leaders that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life. But ultimately, when there are times of turmoil, and even of much greater turmoil than we have right now, we need to be prepared to live by faith and to trust that God will sort it out and that good people will continue to exist through it and after it. All right, well, those are the ideas from Habakkuk. Hopefully that'll be helpful. Thank you very much for your attention. The appeal, once again, is simply, the just shall live by his faith. And the question is, do you have faith in God? Are you being faithful to God? Are you putting your trust in God? Or are you putting your trust in things other than God? Thinking that whether it's the country, whether it's this, that, or the other, that is what would be saving. Well, no, it's not. Have your relationship with God. And if that means you need to repent, if you're a Christian but you haven't been walking the right way, if you need to repent and get back to that fundamental faith, we would encourage you to do so. If you're not a Christian, we would encourage you to turn to God, because ultimately what He has revealed is the path to joy that Habakkuk was able to have no matter what the economic or political circumstances were. If we can help you in any way, please come forward as we stand and sing.